State Affairs come to order just a little bit late this morning, 9:03 a.m. on Tuesday, March 24th, 2016, here in the Buttrovich Room, currently in Juneau. We have President Senator Willikowski, Senator Coghill, Stoltz, and Senator Huggins. Senator McGuire will not be with us today. I believe she's ill. We have several items on the agenda today. We have Senate Bill 154, blood bank license plates, Senate Concurrent Resolution 16, special session, and Senate Bill 175, Military Family Day, and we're going to be putting a preliminary proposed CS for Senate Bill 171, a bill we've previously heard from the administration. So how it can be critiqued, praised, refuted, whatever. So we're going to start with Senate Bill 175. We have, on behalf of Representative Lynn, we have Ms. Milkey. I never mispronounce that one because that's my mother's maiden name. Welcome.
For the record, my name is Esther Milkey, staff to Representative Bob Lynn. First, I'd like you know that Representative Lynn sends regrets. He would have liked to be here today, but he has his own state affairs downstairs, and he couldn't.
He has his own affairs going on?
Yeah. Alaska state affairs, though, so it's all good. He sent along
I thought
a little.
Maybe since he was a little older, it might be to relations at this point, but please go ahead.
He sent along a little.
I'm sorry. Proceed with that horrible distraction.
If he'd been here, he would have said this because he sent this along for me. Military families are the folks back home who help keep our warriors at peak effectiveness, be it stateside duty or combat duty. Worrying about your kids' homework, getting the bills paid on time, or worrying about anything at all back home is not something that's safe to do while the enemy is attempting to kill you. The military family is a major source of morale and the foundation of what's good about our military. The day someone joins the military is the day that the family virtually joins the military, too. When we support the military family, we support the military member. Many service members transfer from one place to another about every 2 years. This means the family also moves somewhere else. The kids change schools, maybe in their senior year. Churches are changed. The spouse may have to give up their job. And, of course, the curtains don't fit in the new place. The spouse, some say, has the toughest job in our military. The military deserves having a day set aside to honor their military families and to recognize a major source of their morale and strength. And now the bill details that Rep. Lynn wanted me to cover. HB 175 establishes Military Family Day to honor and support families of our servicemen and women in Alaska every year on November 1st. Nationally, November is designated as National Military Family Month. The President of the United States typically makes an annual announcement to inform the public about this month. We thought it was fitting to have our Alaskan Military Family Day to coincide with the beginning of the nationally designated month. If you have any questions, I'll do my best to answer them.
Questions from the committee? I don't think you're going to have any arousing opposition. No. Senator Coghill.
Comment. I just Googled that day. It happens also to be All Saints Day. Is there any correlation?
No, sir.
All right. I think military families quite often can be nominated for sainthood.
I think we all represent at this table, all represent communities that have that are incredibly supporting of veterans and their families. Our chambers of commerce, our local groups, our Elks and our Lions, or all the things that make up the fabric of our communities. I have two of my colleagues that are veterans, I'm wedged between two of them here. So I think you have a lot of receptivity at this committee, would be my guess. I'm going to, you can stay where you're sitting. I'm going to,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Yeah, if I might. Number one, both of these are about my wife. All right. My wife, like I, sometimes have problem distinguishing between you and Lydia. So she asked me to apologize to both of you if she used the names interchangeably when she addressed you when she was down here. Number two, as far as the bill, my wife wanted me to pass on to yourself and Representative Lynn thanks because she's one of those ladies, as a mother, has three children that are military guys, and appreciate the thought of and the consideration put into the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go to Mr. Bowen. He's the director of. He went from available to unavailable. Let's try again. We definitely want to get him on the record. Mr. Bowen, if you're still there.
Probably did like many of us, went to hit the mute button and shut it down.
Mr. Clark, do you have any comments on behalf of the department?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ron Clark, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I believe Sir Commissioner Hummel was online and is prepared to testify on this morning.
I don't have her active. She is okay. I please note that somebody is online if they're waiting. It's hard to manage the flow without that. General Hummel. This is one Military and Veterans Affairs and the governors are all aligned on.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Hummel. I am here online.
Please please just give us your comments, remarks, or anything you'd like to add.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and other members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. This is Lori Hummel, calling in from Anchorage. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and also Adjutant General of the Alaska National Guard. I want to thank you, first of all, for the invitation to testify today, and I am honored to speak in favor of House Bill 175. While I'm always prepared to publicly acknowledge the patriotism, dedication, and skill of Alaska's military men and women, I'm especially pleased to focus on the enormous contributions of our military families. In my present position, I see daily examples of the many sacrifices that military families make for all of us. They quite literally make possible the operation of our armed forces, the Guard and Reserve and active component alike. But the public rarely fully sees or appreciates their contributions. I don't need to be Adjutant General to understand the importance of service members' families, because I know what military families do, as I've seen it and lived it firsthand all my life. My father was in the Army from 1948 to 72, for 24 years. For all but the first four, he was married to my mom. They spent 20 married years together in service to our nation. 4 years of the 20, or 20% of that time, he spent in combat. 1 year in Korea, 3 in Vietnam. A total of 2 years of the 20, or another 10% of that time, he spent away from home on field exercises and other places that the Army sent him. Mom had two babies alone overseas, as both times he was away in the field. They lived in 13 different places in those 20 years. She would have liked to have had her own career, but she put those plans on the shelf as she supported military unit functions, Army volunteer programs, and acted as both parents in the absence of her spouse. She starched fatigues in the bathtub, made valentines for single soldiers, and held the hands of those whose loved ones didn't come home from battle. That happened to be my mom, but it describes a lot of moms and dads and wives and husbands, brothers, sisters, and let's not forget military kids, too. I've been a deployed soldier, and I've been the spouse of a deployed soldier. In fact, I am right now the spouse of a deployed soldier. I've had conversations with many dual military couples, and the response is always the same. Being the left-behind spouse is the harder job. The spouse at home has twice the work, all the worry, more time to think about it, and none of the credit. They may or may not be adequately supported by their local communities. This is just my personal experience. There are a lot of families whose service members' deployments have resulted in life-altering injuries. When this happens, family members' lives are just as affected as those of the service members, as they adjust and they care and they give. Similarly, when a member of the military loses his or her life in service, the Gold Star families left behind who are shattered must, of necessity, find a way to move forward, but really they never fully heal. You probably know that about 74,000 veterans call Alaska home. We have more veterans per capita in Alaska than any other state. We are lucky to keep the experience of our veterans here and fortunate that their families follow suit. Our veterans and their families, these Alaskans, deserve our unwavering support and continued efforts. Our veterans' success is not sustained by what they've already done, but what more they will provide, and especially how best we can show our appreciation, especially to the backbone of the military, our military families. We salute these heroes on the home front, and I support your efforts to make Alaska an even more welcoming, appreciative, and supportive community for our military, our veterans, and their families. I agree with Senator Coghill, who said a few minutes ago, it's entirely appropriate that the bill's sponsor chose 1 November, All Saints Day, for this recognition. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for General Hummel? I'd like to ask Mr. Bowen to come to the mic and discuss. There was an action at the Veterans Advisory Council. I'd like to have discussion of that. Mr. Bowen?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I am actually on the phone now. What can I do?
Yes, sir, Mr. Bowen. You attend all of the Veterans Advisory Council meetings?
Which Veterans Advisory Councils? There are several of them.
The one that the governor appointed. I think you know which one I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. The Alaska.
I'm not going to play games here. Please.
Sorry, the AVAC members, yes, sir.
Veterans Advisory Council, AVAC.
Yes, the AVAC, yes, sir.
Okay. There's a lot of deference in the legislature to the Advisory Council. Can you discuss any discussion of this legislation?
We just had a Veterans Advisory Council meeting this week by teleconference. Due to limited travel, that's the way they are meeting this year, and they did not bring forth any new resolutions. They actually, the Veterans Advisory Council was actually to vote in a new chairman of the council, which is Pam Beal, and the vice chair is Sue Ellen Wright Novak. And they also put forth their next meeting will be in September, and they're going to come together and look at two issues, funding a full museum, and looking at
Mr. Bowen, has the advisory council ever addressed this issue?
No, sir, they have not.
Okay, Mr. Bowen, you're dismissed. Brief at ease. Okay. Is there any other testimony on this bill from the public? Anybody from the administration? Are there any amendments? And it has a zero fiscal note. I'd like to have our senior veteran on the committee, if you'd like to make a...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that House Bill 175, Established Military Family Day, be moved from committee with individual comments and zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the bills moved from committee. We'll stand briefly at ease. After the brief at ease, we're going to bring up Senate Bill 154, and I would ask Mr. Brefsinski to come before us. We have a trying to find. I can't remember if we were working on a change last night. We made an error. We had a good idea, but we hadn't done the appropriate function of making sure that any funds raised would be available for the Treasury. So. Minor oversight, and appreciate Department of Administration staff highlighting something that was in front of our face. So, Mr. Brusinski, we have a CS, I believe.
Correct. For the record,
let's go ahead and move the CS.
Chairman, I move that CS for Senate Bill number 154, version hotel, be moved before the committee.
I'll object so the changes can be briefly explained.
For the record, Brandon Brzezinski, staff to Senator Stoltz. As the chairman stated, the change is a result of an oversight. You'll find it on line 1, we added language which allows the Department of Administration to separately account for the funds collected of these license plates and then separately account for them and pay the balance to the, or allow for the balance of the funds to be appropriated to the blood bank.
So we're going to be a little informal here. The staff from administration, did we get it right? There's a nod acknowledged. Thank you for that, catching something that we pre-filed, and sometimes you don't pay as much attention to them. So, hearing no objection, I'll remove mine. And is there other objection to the CS? So the CS is before us more properly drafted. We'll go right to public testimony. I'd like to start with Tim Benintendi because he is the Alaskan citizen who brought this before us. And it's a Senate State Affairs Committee sponsored by request to reflect that it's sponsored on behalf of the Alaska Blood Bank and those who support the activities on that. So, Mr. Benintendi.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's nice to have yet another chance to thank you and each of the committee members and Senator Lisa McGuire yet again, because you folks all were there during the past several years where we got tremendous legislative support for the grant funding to help construct the new blood bank facility, which is now, of course, in operation. So thank you again very much. And I'll be brief. The bill obviously lets us, it authorizes the issuance of blood bank license plates. There's a little extra revenue in it for us, but as much or maybe even more important than that, it's the extra promotional opportunity and visibility that the license plates provide out in the community. And so with that, I'll be brief and say that's my testimony, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
So, Mr. Benintendi, might this promote better driving? Drive carefully. I'm a blood donor.
Well, I would hope so. Okay. We could sure use some better driving in the general driving traffic, but I suspect it won't hurt anything. People might take note of a new license plate out in the roadways and everything, but I don't think it'll hurt us at all.
Well, I'm hoping it'll help us. If that was.
Yeah.
Any questions for Mr. Benintendi? So I want to thank you for your persistent work on that. You, I know you're retired, but you you haven't slowed down.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a great project, and of course, the benefit to the statewide community is a bit incalculable. But it's been nice to be a part of. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to call you Tim because I've known you for 30 years.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next is Bob Scanlon, the CEO of the Blood Bank of Alaska. Here for questions, but we'll give you an opportunity to testify if you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for allowing us to provide our comments in regards to this. I would like to repeat the sentiments of Mr. Benintendi in thanking you and the committee and the legislature as a whole for your generosity in supporting Alaska's sole blood supplier to the state. And without the assistance of the legislature and your support, this project would not have been possible. So I wish to extend my thanks. And I will stand for any questions that the committee may have.
Any questions for Mr. Scanlon? Thank you. Next we have Chris Mello, also a board member for the Blood Bank of Alaska.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Chris Mello, and I serve on the board of directors with Tim Benintendi, and also want to thank you all for your generous support in the blood bank. I want to remind you that we're a 501(c), and that we are an all-Alaskan board, and we're an all-Alaskan outfit. We have over 30,000 donors statewide, and the license plates help us in a number of ways. They help us generate a bit of revenue that we can always use, but they also help in that blood donors are an anonymous bunch. People donate blood anonymously. The recipients of that blood are also anonymous. No recipient knows who donated the blood that saved his or her life. And this gives the donors an opportunity, and the recipients for that matter, to sort of promote the blood bank and let other Alaskans, their friends and neighbors, know that they support the blood bank. And it also may serve as a reminder as you're driving down the street and see that license plate that it's time that you should go donate. And so we think that this will help us in a number of ways. And with that, I can stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Mello? Hearing none. Ms. Erickson, you're here for questions, but did you have any, does the department have any concerns, comments, so forth?
For the record, this is Amy Erickson, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. No, there are no concerns, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad that you were able to fix the oversight of it not being tied to a fund.
Yeah, just a little detail. Well, any questions generally on license plates, or anybody have any DMV complaints while Ms. Erickson's online? Okay, thanks. Doing a good job there, Amy. Thank you. We have next Mr. Bowen. Sorry for the confusion. I thought that I was confusing two bills. So.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I actually wasn't calling in on the other bill, so I was caught off guard. I'm actually calling in on the blood plate license plate, and I'm not calling as a member of the Alaska Blood Bank. I'm calling as a recipient from that. I was in an accident a few years ago. And I thought the best way in the world, you know, seeing that this bill had a piece in there about license plates to where I could visualize and see that as I go back and forth to work every morning, I thought this was a great way of not only advertising the blood bank, but bringing the awareness to people that I hope not one day have to receive their products, but the way thing goes, you never know. I just thought this was a great idea, and like I said, driving back and forth from the valley to Anchorage every day, you tend to look at different things to keep your mind on the road, and a license plate's a great way of doing it. And if there's any questions, I'd be free to answer them.
Very good. Any questions for Mr. Bowen? Is there any other public testimony on the bill? I just want to make sure that this is voluntary blood donor and not the bloodletting that is being recommended by the administration. So that I do want to bring Ms. Erickson back for. I'll go ahead and close the public testimony, but if anybody does come on, we'll pick them up. I want to bring Ms. Erickson back up for some fiscal note questions.
I'm online, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Why don't you just give us a brief narrative of just from past history? Do you have any expectations? We have We have a $250 fiscal note on this one. It's one of the smallest ones I've seen, but other than zero, obviously. But any discussion of that? And secondly, do you have any projected expectations, judging from past history, on other I wouldn't call this a specialty license plate, but I guess I don't know what the terminology is, and maybe you can help me with what we actually call these. But give us your narrative on the fiscal note and historical expectations, judging from this type of license plate, even if it's just a best guess.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Again, Amy Erickson, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. It costs... We would work with the Blood Bank of Alaska to design the plate, and it has to be in a certain format that is used by our vendor. And the commissioner of the Department of Administration will ultimately approve the design. It gets sent to our vendor, which is in Portland, Oregon, and it's a $200 plate fee for the design to issue a sample plate that we will know whether it's satisfactory for being on the vehicle. And we would typically call this a cause plate. We have different causes like breast cancer awareness. Let me think of what other causes we have.
Promotion of life, the Second Amendment.
Yes, NRA, correct.
I call it the Second Amendment.
I don't have any, I can't forecast how many plates will be sold, but I think we have a really a big following here, at least in the Anchorage area, certainly.
So what's the point of number of plates you need? Like if we had one for we have one for Pearl Harbor survivors. I don't even know if how many of those are left, and there's some of them that have obviously the pool is limited, and some of them are a lot broader. Whether it's there's a lot of fans of the Second Amendment, and I think Senator Wilikowski had responsibility for helping get that on the plates.
Mr. Chairman, I think we've only issued one Pearl Harbor survivor plate, if even that. There isn't a minimum limit of how many we would need to order the plates.
Very good. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. And what I'm going to say, I'm not trying to grandstand it. I honestly feel that way. This is an important function. And if Amy, if some of us take up a collection and throw in a few extra cents, can we zero the physical note out if you get your $250?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, we would have no way of accepting the money, but I have seen in a committee in the past that my fiscal note was zeroed out.
Yeah, so say that one more time. If I tell you you're going to get a $250 check, can you zero the fiscal note?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, DMV cannot accept the money.
Thank you.
But we could zero out the fiscal note, but I on any license plate bill, we sort of accept that has all the temptation of an empty rail car rolling by. Everybody wants to throw some cargo on it, so... I was deferring, and we have so many different bills here. At, I know we're a first committee of jurisdiction, and I know the way things work. If finance wants to do this or the rules committee wanted to do an omnibus license plate bill, that's what usually happens around here. I was hoping to, I had a discrete issue, and it was somebody brought it up, and often the first pickup truck or the rail car out of the station gets a lot of extra cargo thrown on it, and that's a. Then finance can look at all the fiscal impacts and deciding whether to zero out or to wait to amortize those fiscal notes. I didn't have a problem with that. We're just the launching pad on the merit of the issue, and then I suspect another committee in the future will. It'll be up to. Leave that issue up to the next committee to deal with, but anybody here can offer amendments or make other suggestions. And Ms. Erickson will nimbly deal with whatever she's dealt. Play those cards, I assume. Ms. Erickson, do you call in your tenure, have there ever been any license plate bills that just had one license plate on them? The cause?
Mr. Chair, I don't recall. I don't recall.
You know, Pearl Harbor survivors, I think, had a single issue. I think now Commissioner Cotton actually sponsored that bill on behalf of a long passed away Pearl Harbor survivor, East Anchorage, I believe, but and lose track. The only complaint I've heard about license plates is from some of the local constabularies is that we're having a hard time figuring out which plates are which, you know, on a quick, on a snowy night with obscured plates. This not always easy. You don't necessarily have a chart of every specialty or cause plate. So that's the only complaint I've ever heard about those. So any other comments from the committee? We'll go to thank you, Mr. Brzezinski. That's why we call him Brandon most of the time. Thank you. We'll get to amendments.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. And I certainly appreciate the bill. As you noted, these bills sometimes do attract amendments, and I do have an amendment on that I'd like to propose, conceptually at least. Your staff has a copy of it. This is, Mr. Chair, if I could move amendment number one, and I think this would be a conceptual amendment because it's tracked to version W as opposed to version H.
I'll go ahead and object, and why don't you describe your amendment?
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment is offered on behalf of a number of constituent groups in my district and all around Anchorage, for that matter. And what it does would be to expand the eligibility for veterans designation on an ID card or driver's license in the state of Alaska in an effort to recognize Lao veterans and Hmong special guerrilla units that fought in support of American interests during the Vietnam era. I won't get into a whole lot about the history of the Hmong, but there were tens of thousands who were trained covertly by the CIA and armed by the United States, and they fought on our behalf. And if I could just read one quote, Mr. Chairman, it's from a man named Edgar Buell, who was senior aide for the United States CIA, and he worked with the Hmong Army. And this is a quote he gave. Quote, every Hmong that died, that was an American back home that didn't die, or one that wasn't injured, or one that was injured that wasn't injured. Somebody in nearly every Hmong family was either fighting or died from fighting. They became refugees because we, the United States government, encouraged them to fight for us. I promised them myself, have no fear, we will take care of you. So the United States government has made promises to the Hmong. They've immigrated. They were refugees. Many of them moved to Laos, lived in refugee camps for many years. They've immigrated into the United States. And so they have been fighting to get recognition as veterans on driver's licenses. And what this would do is to have the Department of Military Veterans Affairs, which in my conversations with them are supportive of this, work with the Department of Administration and DMV to find an alternative proof of veteran status because they don't have DD-214s, and this would be a way of recognizing their service on behalf of our country, Mr. Chairman. And you had asked a question of Verdi Bowen about...
I'm going to go ahead and ask him to speak for
himself.
So okay,
great. We'll go to that. Thank you. I'll leave it there, Mr. Chairman, and if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
I'm going to ask Mr. Bowen to come forward again just so we could you put on the record any comments he has. My apologies. I confused bills, so that's why I was probably jumping on you a little bit.
It's okay, sir. I guess I have a...
Go ahead and identify yourself and your position so we have that in minutes here.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, I'm Bertie Bowen. I'm the Director of Veterans Affairs for the state of Alaska. And through the last couple of years, I have spent a lot of time with the Hmong on different issues of recognition through one of the programs that Senator Murkowski had brought forth in the Senate. And it was to allow them to be interred in our national cemeteries. The Hmong was a 30,000-man fighting force that was under General Vang Pao,
in Laos, and they assisted our downed pilots. Senator Huggins would be able to tell you more exactly about them, because I presume that he most likely fought with them. The difference between the Hmong and most soldiers is the amount of people that was in their army is probably equal to the amount of people they lost during that conflict. And anything that we can do to recognize them would be outstanding. And I just sitting here thinking off the top of my head, we could put together a program similar to our Alaska Territorial Guard and issue them an Alaskan DD Form 214 that would give them recognition, and we could work out those details with Senator Wolankowski later. Okay. If there's any questions, I'm open for them.
Okay, my previous question, has the Veterans Advisory Council taken a position on this issue?
Yes, in the past they have voted against the adding the identification on the driver's license, but they have voted positive on the on a driver's on a plate, but they already assumed that they had a license plate.
Okay. I thank you very much, Mr. Bowen. Is there anybody else that wished to testify on this, well, that wanted to speak on this amendment? I'm going to oppose the amendment, but I'm going to offer scheduling this bill for a hearing next week, and I'd like to have all the folks on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'll withdraw the amendment. And
We'll put it on next week's schedule. I would like to appropriately vet this bill, and I think we've still got time for consideration. So it'll be either on Tuesday or Thursday next week. We'll add it to the schedule. So
appreciate that.
We can give notice to all the veterans groups, and including the Hmong community, who also deserve a chance to participate in this. The bill is in our committee, and we're trying to get through as many as we can. So I think you've just accelerated consideration of it. Well, we were going to try to get to as many of the bills as we can. This is one that was on our radar. So,
thank you.
But that the bill, the amendment is withdrawn. Are there any other amendments?
No amendments. Just if I could, Mr. Chairman. no, that's okay.
Okay. With that, we've discussed the fiscal note, and we'll recognize there is a fiscal note, and I'll continue discussion with the Finance Committee. I had thought about the same issue, and I think other sponsors of similar bills have as well. And, this is about. There are prohibitors, but I think we could probably meet the intent and zero out the fiscal note. I think that's totally accomplishable. I don't want to get into too much finance business here. So we'll leave the fiscal note, because I believe it was arrived at through an honest deliberation, but in the limitations that we have on accepting funds into our treasury. So with that, would somebody like Senator Coghill, would you like to make the motion?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move the Senate bill, the CS for Senate bill number 154 from State Affairs with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Hearing no objection, the bill is moved from committee. I'm going to invite staff back again. We're going to lay a bill on the table before we get to the next bill. We have, does everybody have this? Have you passed that out yet, Mr. George?
To the public and the members, correct.
That's 171, and I want to adopt the CS. It's got some major changes in it. We have proposed amendments to attempt to save funds on travel following past, but we want to make sure that the department has adequate time to respond, and probably not adequate enough to not enough time to delve into it, and it's probably going to be some time spent talking to us individually as well. We have, why don't you just, if we'll get a motion to move the CS.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move that CS for Senate Bill number 171, State Affairs Version Hotel, be brought before the committee.
I'll I'm going to object to its adoption for now and let Mr. George explain the major features.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Daniel George, staff to Senator Stoltz. Before members is CS Work Draft Version H, dated 3/22/16 for Senate Bill 171, a bill previously heard in this committee and presented by the Department of Administration. The major additions, or the additions to the bill in the CS Work Draft, would place the University of Alaska system and the Alaska court system under the state's consolidated travel program, state travel office for participation in travel. Additionally, the CS would put the state's online checkbook, which is currently online but has not always continuously been online and available to the public. It would place that online checkbook into statute so that it would be required to be available to the public for transparency in government spending. And it would also require that the checkbook list the, in addition to the department where the spending takes place, also the allocation and the appropriation where that spending would take place from. Those would be the categories you would see on any fiscal note before a committee in the legislature. Those are the changes, Mr. Chairman.
And on the travel.
Yes, placing the university and the court system under the state's travel program and the managed negotiated contracts. And we did provide a copy of the CS to the administration, to the court system, and to the university. And I believe they are in receipt of it and have been looking it over.
We've certainly seen a defensiveness from other state agencies who not us. So it makes you I'd like to certainly welcome any consideration of other entities, whether it's the Railroad, AHFC, ADA, AGDC, whatever. You know, I wanted to have this before so members could look at amendments. The issues on the online checkbook came from Senator Wilikowski. I appreciated that it was relevant. We're talking about an issue doing technical changes and some reforms and cost savings, so it fit there appropriately, and buttressed by Representative Reinbold offering some suggestions as well, further details. I think there's all good public policy elements in there, and we'll look at, but it is a major policy issue, so we wanted to make sure this was laid upon the table so the public and the administration can look at this and give us their constructive comments, compliments, if those are forthcoming, and probably criticisms and objections. So then we'll make the policy decision. So I'll remove my objection. Is there any other objection to the adoption? So if the bill is will be before us for more official deliberation in the near future. And that's Senate Bill 171. Thank you. You want to stay in place? Next up, we have Senate Concurrent Resolution 16.
I could grab my documents, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. We'll stand briefly at ease. back to order. After a brief recess, we have before us the last item for today is Senate concurrent resolution number 16. We have a now this wasn't adopted last year. This is a recent CS. So,
Mr. Chairman, I move that CS or Senate concurrent resolution number 16, Russian whiskey, be brought before the committee.
I'll object for Mr. George's presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Daniel George, staff to Senator Stoltz. The CS simply updates the resolution. I think we talked about this at an earlier hearing this year to reflect any special session that might be called after adjournment of the second session of the 29th legislature. When this resolution was introduced last year, there was a preponderance of the evidence that we would have a special session following the first regular session, and that did occur three times. Now we are in a situation where there, if a special session is called after the adjournment of the second session, regular session, this would simply advise and where that session would be held.
I'll remove my objection to adopting the updated CS. Are there any other objections? Hearing none, it's before us. So I'll go ahead and make the presentation. This is a resolution very specific to date and time and to circumstances. It's not a legislative move, although for the record, I do support one, and it's not a hidden fact. But this is a very discreet, specific resolution dealing with the circumstances of construction in this building. Many of us, over some objections of our constituents, supported the safety and seismic improvements and structural necessary life safety issues of a significant appropriation to make sure this capital was habitable. And that's the as we know for the last couple of years, we've had ongoing construction. We had it during the previous special session. This is very specific to not interfering with the work of the construction company, which has a performance bond to finish in excess of $5 million to work guarantee. I don't want the legislature's activity and intrusion of slowing down construction. Most of my family is involved in construction, I'm trying to work around somebody or in an active place where there's a lot of people. You lose efficiency. It's a difficult, more expensive process, and it would very well could cause us to lose our financial standing on performance. That's a big issue. The productivity of trying to work around construction going on very very problematic, and I just know from my history of being involved here, working in staff in the legislature, it's as we go deeper into the spring and summer months, Juneau is less anxious to have us here because they've got another industry, or tourism and housing and other costs go astronomically through the roof, and even availability. I know I've had cases where I've actually left my apartment early because a family who's here working on the tourism industry, I went and slept in my office because there was a husband and wife with five kids who were at the door and said, oh, we thought we were supposed to check in today, and I just left because I understand there's a transition of activities. And I wasn't going to turn away five little kids at 11 o'clock at night, as cold-hearted as a Republican as I might be accused of being. But this is really about a practical issue to a very specific time. It deals with the 29th Alaska Legislature in the second session, a very practical application of it, the difficulty of meeting here during when there are major construction, there's seismic and structural modifications going on. We don't want to impede that. It certainly provides us an opportunity to meet where most Alaskans live. That's just an ancillary positive benefit, I believe, that's created by the circumstances of not being able to meet here. If there's a legislative move or the so-called ominous capital move, that will certainly be through a totally different deliberative process and probably involve the voting public as well, is my guess, because of the issues of the Frank Initiative and others. I believe especially in these times, things like that should be, a lot of things should be voted on by the public that have consequences. So, and that's been the history, and that's what the voters demand. This is a very discreet, specific amendment, not just promoted, but necessitated by the circumstances. And I will, I would much rather meet North, certainly it will save the state money. I won't take per diem. I'll certainly have other, I'm just fine. I'd give up session per diem forever, unlike my Juneau colleagues, if I had the opportunity to meet closer to my constituents on a regular basis. There have been reports that our nonpartisan, non-affiliated, Juneau-based research agencies and legislative staff have put out that indicate less expensive. I'm not going to say, it would probably be pejorative to say exaggerated costs of the Anchorage session, but maybe overstated costs, and the facts of the actual costs have borne out that those weren't the case, and it was far less expensive to have the session in Anchorage, at least on that limited special circumstance basis. Again, a very special circumstance. Not meant to, as much as I'd like to, I won't conceal what my ultimate best scenario would be, but that's a whole other process. And this is a resolution. It will certainly allow folks to put themselves on the record. My colleagues from Southeast can certainly express an adamant opposition, and I understand that. And folks from the North can, into the West, can express their opinions, and that will help the deliberative process of the legislature and the governor not forcing us to meet in an impractical place for very political reasons. Well, that's my. I took the liberty of a little editorial. It is my bill, and so Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, and I second your words, but add a couple things on. And I support this both in by philosophy and by spirit. What we're going to do, the governor, we got a letter from the governor, and he's essentially saying we want to take the people's money. That's called a tax. And if you don't pass that during the regular session, we're going to have a special session. And that's what you're addressing this year. And, I know my neighbors want to be heard. I'd rather see them than just hear them over the telephone about how they feel about it, because I'll just take an income tax. Overwhelming feedback from the constituents I've heard from is no income tax, Charlie Huggins. And yet that is one of the major pieces that the governor is asking us to enact, which I adamantly oppose based on the feedback and based on my natural instincts. So, the business of how much it cost in Juneau versus how much it cost in Anchorage as far as getting us there and to do the business is almost semi-irrelevant if the numbers are even close, because this is about taking money from people using the term tax. And so I'm with you 100%, and I wish I'd have thought of this.
Any other comments? Mr. George. I leave something. Oh, Senator Coghill. I'm sorry. He was pointing to you. I thought he was saying. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I'm going to support the resolution. I think there are several things. I think you're pointing out the retrofitting on the building is pretty significant. But there are some things that are unique about a special session. One of them is they're usually narrowed down to one or two topics, maybe three at the most. And one of the hidden taxes of the general population is their lack of accessibility to Juneau. They really depend upon sending down their representatives, lobbyists, and groups that come down here. It's expensive to get down here. But if you can get in a car and drive from Fairbanks, even North Pole, on a special issue, and it looks like it will be focused around the state budget and what the economy can give, I think having people
on that road system with the ability to come to that location and let their voices be heard, I think is going to be very important. It's just tougher when you have a special session in Juneau to get that kind of input. And so I think even last year when we had the special session, we had sign waivers out there, but we also had other people who had other opinions that were able to come walk through those sign waivers and give us their opinions, which I appreciated. So it's just narrowly focused, and probably the more appropriate thing to do. I'm not against having a special session here. If there's a time to iron out issues that a regular session has a hard time getting to, the pressure point right now is the building construction. I don't like packing up everything and moving just for one question, if we can get out of it. And so, but I think we're in kind of a new kind of historical moment in Alaska in many ways, and that is how do we move forward on the state of Alaska. And we have a lot of people paying a lot of money to campaign on ways to do that. But the general population, quite often, those who run their small businesses are having to do anything from flying into the villages to driving trucks around town or manage their portion of their business, just have a harder time getting to us. And so emails are nice, but a face is better. So I kind of like this idea, so I'm going to support your resolution, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments? I do remember... 2015, the senator from Juneau was complaining about commissioners not being in Anchorage. He said teleconferences are fine, but there's no substitute for face-to-face. Mm-hmm. When I heard that, I'm sure he regrets actually saying that, but he's my good friend. But you know, you can't have arguments both ways. That teleconferences are fine, but except for other than that, we wouldn't have to have high school travel. We could just play the state basketball tournament by teleconference, I guess. I don't think this is a very complicated measure, and it will divide people philosophically and geographically unnecessarily, because it will be construed by many as a capital move bill or a permanent legislative bill. But it was carefully crafted with a lot of consideration about the special circumstances dealing with the. And just, I will say, editorially, not as relevant to the bill, but it could be any iteration of when we're closer to the folks. But it wasn't that my constituents came to the Capitol to the special session in the late spring, early summer. They're too busy working. But I did see them in the post office, did see them in the grocery mm-hmm. stores, I did see them like trying to grab a quick bite to eat. And I always budget plenty of extra time. That's where people interact with us. I don't think a lot of our constituents really come to the Capitol. They expect us to exercise their good judgment and reach out to them when there's important things. And when we had that, I've never had such a unique opportunity to hear from so many people. Oftentimes, it also reminds us about we're not as elevated as some folks like to make the legislature. And I really like that, bringing it down to earth, as they say, gosh, aren't you guys still in Juneau? Or, you know, and it's and you know what? I'm never offended by that. I'm always I'd like to hear that. Is that, you know what? What we do down here, it's important, but we become collectively more fascinated than the average public member is, and they're on with their daily life, and they let us know when something's important, and they're not shy about it, as we're hearing. I was on a talk radio show today, and only for a brief period of time, but I was 12 callers in a period of about 30 minutes, all saying, "What is this guy thinking about the income tax?" And I mean, those were self-initiated. Nobody provoked them, but those are the type of comments we're likely to hear when we're back in our grocery stores, post office, and maybe get to see a spring sporting event if we get out of session in time, but. I sure appreciate the feedback, and that's more important. My constituents just don't, by and large, 99.9% will not come to a legislative proceeding because they're too busy with their regular life, and that's our job. But that was the biggest advantage of being there, and certainly I'd like to do it permanently, but that's not what this bill is about. I'm sure my motives will be reassigned and assessed, and because I do have a record of it, but it's not through this vehicle. Very discreet, very specific to the circumstances, and it is just a resolution. So it's bringing this together as we come as a body, two bodies, to deliberate where what is in the best interest of the Treasury, the people of Alaska, and so forth. So, Senator Huggins, would you like to move on?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that CS for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 16, State Affairs Version Whiskey, be moved from committee.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, apologize for the editorial. I don't get to talk about things that I really like too often. I think that is our last item for deliberation. I appreciate everybody's comments on Senate Bill 171. We've already had the constructive work by Senator Lilikowski on the checkbook, and Senator Reinbold with an issue that she brought to us that had been considered by the House, and a lot of other members of the House said they would have liked to have voted for it, and so this is an opportunity to do something that makes sense. So there's certainly a big contention. Nobody likes to give up their turf, protect their ability to, but we're in a paradigm where we have to look at all cost savings, but we just don't I don't want to amble into something that we think might save money and doesn't. So that's what this deliberative process is for. So appreciate everybody's time today, and we will be making out the schedule today, and we'll talk to you, Senator Wilikowski, and see what where we fit that in, so give you time to make sure both sides. I'd like the Veterans Advisory Council as well to testify, as well as the Hmongs, and maybe we can get to a resolution. Is there any other business before us today? Thank you, everybody, for your participation. We stand adjourned at 10:04.